Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
All right. Pop Life Podcast. Today is October 27.
Yep.
Oh, shit. It's popping. Got it.
Hit it out the park today.
Yeah, I know. I'm hot today. How's everybody doing?
I'm good.
We're good. It's just nasty outside.
The weather's disgusting. It's horrible. Good day to stay in the crib and watch Netflix or clean up or do some type of shit.
Matter of fact, I bought Call of Duty the other day, so I'm finna jump on that.
Oh, you about to get on that. You about to be lit for the day.
Go down in the basement. It's a wrap.
It's over. See this nigga around 11:30. before I go, any shout outs?
Nah.
I don't think so.
I ain't got no shout outs.
No shout outs. I had one and I'm totally blanking on it now. And it was a good one. It was like some shit I seen on the train. But I mean, this ain't a shout out, but I think I've brought this up on the show maybe even more than once, but it just like every time I see it, it just gets crazy and crazy. I keep tweeting and talking about this. The level of homelessness in the city is like, it's getting to like the 1980s level. Like,
for sure.
It's crazy out there, man. Like, there's the people are sleeping on the street again, the homeless people sleeping in the subways, the people begging. It's crazy. It's literally crazy now. It's not.
And I don't know if they had genuinely gone down. There was something happening. Sean, you might know better than I would, but wasn't Bloomberg actively like just doing more street sweeping?
Well, this really, a part of the wave of you not seeing homeless people for a very long time was that the broken windows Giuliani stage, which was quality of life crimes. So the squeegee men, the panhandlers,
yeah,
all of that was sort of
They
were getting locked up. They were being arrested, right? So as they've decriminalized that, like, it's sort of brought back that element of sort of aggressive panhandling. This isn't just a guy shaking a cup. Cause now, right, you know, guys are like in the middle of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you can't really drive now. Shelters are closing.
Yeah, that's
yes, that's a really big thing.
As shelters
close, what that really does is it basically just displaces people, right? Like, mm-hmm, people who are sort of from that community or would live in a shelter close to their community can no longer do that, right? They're put up in these sort of, you know, suspect hotels. And usually those places are a little bit on the outskirts.
Yeah.
They're like Queens.
And dangerous as well.
Yes. And still dangerous. They're all of the elements that you have to deal with shelters. So, yes. And the cost of living in New York is just increasing. It's increasing and it's increasing. And there's, mm-hmm, not really a place for people who are, working poor, to stay. It's like either you have to be completely destitute or you have to be making damn near like $70,000 a year.
Yeah.
To fucking live in a decent place to, in
well,
New York.
Also because in New York, unless you're in NYSHA, you have to make, I think you have to literally, you have to make some ridiculous, I can't remember how much it is, but you
it's
have
like
to make
$7,000
a certain amount
like
times your rent. Like if your rent is whatever, mm-hmm, per month, I think you have to actually
like 40 times. 40
like 40 times.
No. In NYCHA, mm-hmm, this is completely based on your income now.
Okay.
It is completely based on your income. So basically what happens is, and I've gone through this because when my dad passed away and my mom's income increased, mm, due to getting his Social Security, her rent increased like, mm, immediately,
right,
overnight.
Right.
Wow.
So it is based on the income. For you to qualify for certain, I guess, programs and things like that, it's right, like a really, really small amount,
that you actually get
that you have to sort of make. in order to qualify. Like if you make more than like $14,000, like some ridiculous number, you don't qualify.
$14,000 with us for a family of four.
Right. Yeah, it's like ridiculous. It's like ridiculous, ridiculous things.
And then and if you're not trying to be in Section 8, for lack of a better word, housing. What I was saying was the amount you have to make to qualify to be a single renter is insane. Like renting an apartment in New York is like buying a house. Like the amount of paperwork you gotta go through, the amount of like you gotta show like 2 years of tax returns, 3 years of bank statements. Like it's insane. And it takes a lot to qualify. And we have an issue happening in New York, which is probably happening in a bunch of other cities, where rent controlled apartments are being snatched up by people who are turning them into Airbnbs.
Yep.
Yeah, that's becoming.
They can't really monitor it.
Yeah, that's becoming an issue. There are, and the reason that landlords do this, I mean, there are. I don't want to say there's two sides to this story, but there is an understanding as to why landlords would do this, right? Because New York is very, very renter friendly.
Right.
In that, basically, man, it will take you forever. To get a tenant. And definitely, if you're trying to evict somebody between now and like February, you can forget that shit.
With cold weather,
they just not even doing it, dude. Like, unless this person is like selling drugs or something that's like endangering people, if it's just non-payment of rent, like they're going to try and figure that out and work that out. So this is why landlords have been increasingly on top of, who they're renting to and being a little more selective. And yes, the Airbnbs are definitely becoming an issue. Rent controlled apartments are becoming few and far between because for many people that don't know, rent controlled apartments are basically like apartments that are in sort of high end neighborhoods that are stabilized. So basically Miss Ann is paying like $600 a month for rent when the fair market value for that same apartment is like $2,800 or something like that. And so what happens
is... And been paying that rent since 1968.
Basically, right? Yeah. So Miss Ann, when Miss Ann dies, she does not get to pass that rent-controlled apartment down.
Yep. And that's what used to happen like in Friends. Like on the TV show Friends, people were always like, how they got this big ass apartment. And Friends was actually a little bit true to story of like most places where it's like Monica Geller took over her grandmother's apartment. Cause it's like, that's what you used to do. Like somebody would die and you just move into their shit. But they're being more like you would just pass those apartments down to family. But now they're not having that. Like if your name wasn't on the lease.
Yeah, it's a wrap.
Also, I know what's happening in New York is, they've closed down a couple of the methadone clinics as well. So there's a big methadone clinic in Harlem. I think there's maybe two actually. There's one on the east side and there's one right there off Lenox. And so like in Harlem, I know specifically like there's, you seeing like the crazy, the drug addicts, but you seeing like, well, I knew it was a change. It was not, you're seeing like white drug addicts.
Right.
I'm like, oh, these are white folks up like late sleeping on the street in Harlem, which was weird. But again, I think there was a methadone clinic somewhere down in the Village of Soho area. Of course they closed down because those people don't want that shit. Right. And they forcing them all to come uptown. So now like Harlem is like, it's really wild because you got, the super high end condo buildings and all that. But then you got like literally like, folks like sleeping on the street and it's kind of nice seeing like white folks with their dogs with the signs and all that crazy shit. This is
I noticed that in the Heights too. So the area I live in Washington Heights.
Oh, so they coming up that far?
Well, it used to apparently be like people tell me that it used to just be Zombieville up there because it's such a central part of like a bunch of drug trade.
The Dominicans and the Colombians.
So I've been there since 2011, and I know that right before I got there, there had been like a big cleanup because there were a couple of like those small little parks that aren't really parks. They're like islands in between the
streets. Yeah, the islands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had cleaned a bunch of those up and like we like renovated them and made them nice. And I've been noticing over the past year, there's like the clear drug addicts hanging out in there again. Just be there all day, all night, nodding, doing whatever. And they're trying to do stuff. They're trying to put like barricades up. They're trying to do all kinds of stuff to deter them and they can't.
Yeah,
it's not the case when I first moved up there, but it's coming back now.
It's getting worse. Yeah. So, I mean, Jesus, I don't want to put no disparaging words on them because they obviously have issues, but shit is about to get way worse before it gets
better. We're about to be back to old New York, especially with the way the economy's going. We're going to be back to old New York in a minute, for real.
And you know, and now the winter's
coming. With more people here.
Super crazy, you know? Yeah. So definitely wanted to just kind of mention that. Like I said, every time I'm on the train, I'm like, wow, this is getting nuts. Also wanted to mention, I ain't win the lottery.
Neither did I.
That shit.
Yeah. I played my numbers.
I had my plans too, man. I was gonna go down there.
You gonna put half away? You gonna put half to the side?
I'll go give a check, right? I was gonna.
You
give
gonna take a lump sum?
I'll take my lump sum.
Yeah, I want the annuity.
I'm gonna get a new cell phone. I'm gonna leave the old cell phone on just to laugh at all the niggas I was gonna be calling and texting trying to get on.
So you were gonna let people know it was you?
Yeah, well, I think in New York you have to go down and do the song and dance. I know a couple people have found loopholes. I think we talked about one on the show where the woman in Jamaica, they wore a mask.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I would go in a wig and shit.
Yeah, I might go in a mask or something, but I might let them know. And then I was going to go down south to my family house and sit. Nobody know where they live at. Down in Kentucky. You know what I'm saying? sit low for a minute. I'm gonna reach out to still a few people. I would definitely call y'all. A couple other people I reach out to, you know, I'll help you out if I can. And then, then I move down south somewhere, you know, and get me a place, you know, maybe somewhere out west, and you know, just live a good life, quiet life.
I would have me an apartment
in the city, have me an apartment somewhere in the south, probably Atlanta, somewhere out west, probably the Bay Area, though, not LA. Yeah, Houston. Might do Houston too. I love me some Houston. And then, you know, I just live life. And I should probably do a podcast with y'all talking about how my life done changed.
Being rich.
and I
we call that shit Jeff is rich.
Yeah, exactly. Jeff is rich as fuck, and I'm stunting on the gram. that was my plans. But you know, they don't
win
around.
I really want, I hope you win just so we can do the Jeff is Rich podcast.
Well,
and
I can tell
what
you.
Ridiculous shit did you do this week,
Jeff? Exactly.
My plan was I was gonna show my natural ass. I was gonna be strutting out there like George Jefferson. Like, oh, I was showing it. Oh yeah, nigga, it's me. And I got all the money, nigga.
All the money.
I'm gonna be calling the bank. Hey, nigga, I need 273,000 in singles. And I'm going to count it out and put it right back in the bank, nigga.
Exactly.
Give me $5,000 in nickels.
Exactly. Shit. You know what I'm saying? Just cause, goddammit. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
I heard from my friend Malika, who y'all know, crazy ass Malika. Her ex Kenny used to drive for Russell. He grew up with Russell in Queens. And he said that when Leor and Russell sold Def Jam, what they did was they actually called all the friends and family and said, bring all your bills to this accountant's office.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they
picked
up everybody's bill. Just the one time. But any bill you had.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yes, the one time he said, just bring all your bills here and the accountant's going to pay off all your bills. That was their little gift.
Amazing.
Yeah, I might have done some shit like that for certain family and friends.
I would have called maybe five people.
Oh, and I would have another party up, Stingrays.
Okay.
But no.
And bought the bar out.
Bought it all out.
And they definitely only taking cash now once they hear that shit. Them niggas don't want no parts of the credit card.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm gonna go on and play again and hopefully we can get that podcast going. And I'll pay y'all a handsome sum to produce it, you know?
I appreciate that, Jeffrey. Now, I'm taking the annuity, so I ain't gonna have it like that because, you know.
I ain't trusting myself to live 20, 25 years. The way I'm going to be balling, I might live a good 5-6 years and I'll be out.
The opposite. I don't trust myself to have the lump sum. I would rather have the annuity so I know I'm good for a little while. And then, you know, I know it's coming every year. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, peace to the winner somewhere in South Carolina. I also wanted to mention Andrew.
Oh, you know, we called all the South Carolina family light. Was it you? Was it you?
Exactly.
Nigga, was that you?
Well, Clarice, did you win that number? I wanted to say peace to Andrew Gilliam, running for governor down in the state of Florida. He did two debates with his opponent, Ron DeSantis, and cleanly wiped the floor, cleat, wiped the floor with his ass in a very black FAMU, black college way.
Yeah.
I know cousin, country cousin and the rest of her, FAMU clan are going ham on how well he's doing. Ron DeSantis is clearly unqualified to be governor anyway. He's, his whole campaign is just like, I like Trump and he likes me. That's literally his whole campaign. Like, so he's just leaning on him, just being a racist, basically.
What I appreciate about Gilliam is that all he's really doing is being frank in a way that most Democrats have shied away from doing.
Yeah, he's not dancing. He's not dancing.
Yeah, at moments when it counts. Like, Andrew was like, yeah, I'm black. I was born black. As far as I know, I'm going to die black. But, like, that seems to be DeSantis' whole thing is that I'm black. Guess what? Yes, I'm black. Like, he was so frank and so not pulling punches, not using colloquialism, not whatever. Like, he was just like, let's call a thing a thing. Like when he said, I'm not saying he's racist, but I'm saying that racists think he's racist.
That's like, that's one of the greatest lines in American history.
Ever. And the GOP isn't used to hearing any Democrat talk that frankly on a public scale like that directly to somebody's face. You know what I mean? And we actually need more of that.
Yeah, because it's always like, oh, we need to be civil and we need to be
peaceful. Fuck all that. And he was being civil, but he was still being real.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, he's ahead in the polls now and, you know, hoping that he wins because we need some heads in there. And then peace to Stacey Abrams, who's in Atlanta, in Georgia.
I'm running for governor. Race.
Yeah. It's, right now, I'm worried about the race for several reasons. One of the main reasons, which is obviously Brian Kemp is the Secretary of State and controls all the and it controls the elections and all the electorate. So, that's a tough one. I know they had a debate this week passed. Stacey did pretty well, but she didn't like crush. Cause I don't think her personality is the crush.
Right.
But
they've got 4,500 mail-in ballots from Dade is Miami from, what county is it in Georgia that she really needs? I can't remember but it's one of like the black counties. They got 4,500 mail-in ballots that were delivered by the Dems. The election commission is like, oh, we only found like 78. They got like some hundreds of thousands registrations that were just canceled.
Mm-hmm.
They got, the dumb shit. I mean like hundreds of thousands. And then they have like tens of thousands, like 53,000 that are in limbo. And it had to go to the state Supreme Court on that. So like he is actively just trying to steal the election. It's crazy.
Yeah. Openly.
Openly. It is not even a thing.
Yeah, because I'm very worried about that one. I'm hoping, but I don't know. They going hard in Georgia. And again, Brian Kemp has some name recognition down there as well because he's the Secretary of State. So it's not like Ron DeSantis who just kind of popped up, you know. So I'm praying for you, Stacey, and I'm pulling for you, but, you know, we'll see. So that's that. I want to discuss next. You know what? I mean, I want to just do some of the dirty shit early so we could kind of lighten the mood as we go. So today, it was a crazy shooting in Pittsburgh. A guy walked into a synagogue with AR-15.
Today? And, I totally missed that.
Yeah,
today.
Oh,
yeah,
now
like a while ago. Yeah.
About 2 hours ago now.
Killed several people in the synagogue and then also killed three police officers who came on the scene.
Eight parishioners and three police officers,
right, who came on the scene. It's a horrible scene. Of course, your man Trump, they interviewed him. He said,
It had nothing to do with gun control.
No, he said, oh, they should have, if they had guns in the synagogue, then it would have been a different outcome. That's what he said. Crazy. He said it's like 20 minutes ago. Like, I'm like,
that's what I'm looking at now.
So, and then earlier in the week, a man, in Kentucky, killed some people in a grocery store, who previously had tried to get into black people in a grocery store. Let me be clear.
Yeah, it was. Well, let's just say the names. Maurice Stallard, rest in peace to him, and Miss Vicki Lee Jones were the two people that he shot, the two black folks that he killed in the Krogers.
Yeah. And they found out that he had tried to get into a black church before right. that, but fortunately the church doors were locked and secured, so he couldn't get in. So he went to the Kroger and shot these people, and said that you basically, like, you know, yeah, Trump said, you know, I should be doing this shit. And right. then,
and then when somebody confronted him, there was a person in the store who confronted him with a gun, and, your man said, whites don't kill whites.
Yeah, whites don't kill whites.
Yeah.
And then, of course, earlier, a couple of days ago, we had the, all these bombs mailed out, to mm-hmm. various, former presidents and, politicians and Robert De Niro and, you know, all these people, basically everybody who was has been a critic of Trump got these pipe bombs mailed to them.
Yep.
And this guy the in Clintons, Florida.
Clintons, Kamala Harris, yeah. Cory Booker. Robert De Niro.
Yep, CNN. The CNN offices. John Brennan.
Yeah,
a ton of people. This guy Caesar. Biden. Yeah, Caesar. I don't even
know.
Sayak. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Yeah, they found him in Florida. As of now, he's not even, you know, I'm not surprised, he's not even cooperating with police, but you know, they're going to get his punk ass to talk. They're sending him to New York, actually extraditing him to New York, to the Southern District. So he's, you know, they'll be dealing with that. But again, all this is happening under your man's watch, and not in these three cases that we just mentioned. Forget the hundred, you know, the many, many others. Your man hasn't condemned anybody. He's basically
he said it's the media.
Yeah, it's like your fault. Yeah, he's like, if y'all treat me nice, this wouldn't happen.
Which is like, yeah. What? And it's been painting him to try to even keep a civil tone. Like he was at a rally the first day of the bomb.
It was in Montana or Wisconsin.
Somewhere. But it was the first day of the bomb mailing. And he was like, see how nice I'm being today, everybody? I'm being really nice right now. Like, he was literally saying that. He was like, see how nice I'm being?
Yeah.
See how nice I'm being to everybody? Like it's like a little kid. Like, see, mommy, you told me to, you know. But when talking to the press directly the next day, the press said, are you going to tone down your tone, your rhetoric? And he was like, actually, I could tone it up because you guys treat me really unfairly. So it's like a threat. Yeah.
Well, it's a game for him. Clearly he is, he understands what he is doing. He's very clear. He's very conscious of that. He understands that these lone wolf type of folks and these sort of ridiculous fringe folks are going to operate on his behalf. Like Florida and probably like Pittsburgh. We haven't gotten the complete information, but I think.
Yeah, but they looked at the Pittsburgh guy's Twitter, and it was definitely a lot of like pro Trump tweets on his Twitter.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of get what this is. And I just want to say, and I'll kind of go back, Jeff, to when you talked about the Kentucky shooting with the guy who tried to get into the church. I'm not great at organizing, but I would love to know if there is any sort of organization that could help some of the struggling, places of worship, that are susceptible, may not have self-locking doors, may not have sort of, you know, security measures, maybe some cameras, things like that. Because if you are a member of these churches and you have security experience and you have, any sort of knowledge about any of this stuff, this might be a good time to lend your services to your church. This might be a really good time to lend your services to your community. Some of you guys have been in the military. You guys understand some of this stuff a little more intimately. Some folks, you know, work in security industries. Just give them a walkthrough. I always say it jokingly, right? But sit down with Deacon Watkins and them and talk to them, tell them what to do in case of an emergency. Make sure that they know that there's some sort of procedure that they're supposed to enact when these things happen. We just can no longer act like, this isn't going to be just a one-off thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This is also, clearly something.
Yes, it's something moving. And I think that I really feel like this. I think when we, you know, in a few years when we look back on what's to come from all this stuff and more things are coming, sadly. I really feel like the neo-Nazis and the nationalists and the, you know, the you know, the hate groups and whatever you want to call them. I feel like they're way more organized than we want to give them credit for. I think that, Charlottesville was the kickoff. And I think that they are really planning and start, not even planning. Let me change that. They're really trying to start the race war. They're doing things constantly. Like there's been, like I said, shootings and killings in black churches and synagogues and, you know, guys getting jumped on the street and, you know, they had guys in New York City like a couple weeks ago going ham. Like I don't think these are kind of like lone wolf kind of things. I think there's an organization, especially now with obviously with the internet being what it is. And I think they're genuinely trying to start a race war, because, you know, black people and brown people and Jewish people and gay people and, you know, all the groups that they hate they feel like they're not in check anymore. And I really feel like that's what's happening. I don't think this is just like, oh, randomly somebody did this or so randomly.
No,
somebody did
that. I don't think that it is. I think that there is a level of organization to a lot of these groups that we are, I think that many of us are aware that there's some organization. I mean, we know about these sort of paramilitary organizations that are out in the hills of Pennsylvania and West Virginia and they do all of this sort of shit.
But they're in the cities now. They're not just out in the hills no more.
Yes, yes. Well, I also think that we have, especially for those of us that live in very big cities, New York, Atlanta, and places like
San
that.
San Francisco,
like,
whatever.
What happens is that we've had this sort of enclave, and we've talked about, you know, when you go outside of the city, when you go upstate, it is a very different part of the city. And just like Jersey, there's a part of Jersey that it's like crossing over into, oh shit, where am I right now?
And I think
most of the states have that. And so I'm not saying that they are lone. When I say lone wolves, I mean, maybe they're not a part of an organization, but what has been implemented and what the internet has provided is support systems. So while it may not necessarily be, you know, as organized as just this one particular group has 700 people, you know, those groups are lending support to people who are on the fringes and are willing to do their bidding.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I agree. And your man, I tweeted this just a few minutes ago. Your man's literally like the epitome of just a bad parent, and he's the dad to these groups. And these groups, you know, do shit and kill people and all kind of shit. And like I said earlier, he never chastises them for anything. So they're like, yo, we got his total support. David Duke and Richard Spencer have said it. You know, we got his total support. We can do whatever we want to do. He's never going to say we were wrong.
And he hasn't once.
He always says, "Oh, they're good people." And yo, if they had guns, then you know maybe it just would have been a shootout, and it could have been, you know, they could have saved themselves. Basically, like blaming them for not coming to a synagogue or a church, you know, armed to the teeth. So again, this is gonna get worse before it gets better. And another thing I wanted to just say, very interesting, and I haven't seen anybody write about this, but so far, and I'm not obviously like saying this to wish anything on anybody, but so far it's interesting. We haven't seen this type of aggression towards a lot of the Latin people who they always, you know, kill for, just go after for immigration and all that. And I think that's because, and that's why Trump is always talking about MS-13, because them dudes is about it. They have their own kind of thing. It's like, yo, we go after them, they coming back with firepower. Most of the time they're going after people who don't, they know people in the church or in the synagogue are not going to have firepower. They're not going after MS-13 guys. You know, we go after them, we're going to catch L's. So they're preying on the weak and the unarmed as well, which is why I think he goes so hard on, they always talk about MS-13, because he knows these guys are armed to the teeth. And if they go after them, they're going to have casualties too.
Yeah.
So, it's ugly time. It's an ugly time. And, you know, I don't want to get into all the other shit, like, cause we could talk about it all day, but
they also, and just, you know, as a news note, they have not, confirmed whether or not those bombs were operable, but they but were.
But the head of the FBI.
I think they said they were.
No, they, well, what I read, well, maybe, you know what? This is what happens when the news changes every 37 minutes. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So,
I read that
they were not considered a hoax, that they were real bombs made. Mm-hmm. They just don't know if they were made,
to go off.
In a way, they were meant to go off. They just don't know that they were made well enough to go off. They were trying to figure out, and I don't know.
Maybe that's what I read, is that they weren't a hoax, and I took that.
They're saying that they weren't a hoax, meaning that he might have, he definitely attempted and wanted to this shit to happen, whether or not he had the capability and the know-how, and the proper materials to make a real, a bomb that would actually go off. Is another question, but it still had the same effect. I was actually in New York, during that time. I was on the West Side Highways where our office is.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, it was a ton of black SUVs blowing down the West Side Highway, bro.
I bet.
And these were not, I know the cop ones, you know, cause they only have certain lights. These were the ones with the lights in the rear. In the tail part, like these look
the feds.
Dude, they was high stepping down the West Side Highway, dude. Yeah. So it was a very, very tense time. Of course, New York City always gets tense when we see that. We don't know what's happening and what's next. So yeah, I mean, I think this is going to be, some ongoing things, man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And also, but I think what's interesting is, even though this is definitely taking over the news cycle, and there was a point where this would have shut the entire news cycle down. Like, this would have been all we're talking about. I mean, because somebody was like, comparatively, the Unabomber had sent almost as many bombs total over a year as were sent in 2 days.
Yep. And it's already like the next thing because of this shooting today.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. I want to, since we just, you know, finish up the nastiness, the caravan. So there's they're calling it a caravan. So I don't think it's quite 10,000 people, 5,000 to 6,000 people walking from Honduras up, their final stop is up through Mexico, and some of them are going to try to get to the border. Now, I did some research on this and found it very interesting. Apparently, this caravan happens every year. This is like a thing.
Oh, it's like migration?
Yes, this is a thing. And a lot of people who are in the caravan, it's almost like I don't want to call it a holiday because that's not the right term. But they're not trying, they just join the caravan as a thing to walk, but they're not trying to come to the States. They peel off in different places. They just walk. It's a thing that they do every year to walk. Some of them and many of them are really trying to walk to Mexico. They're not trying to come to the States. Mexico is much more opening. Obviously, also there's a cultural connection because of language and stuff.
Right.
So a lot of them are just walking to Mexico and then, you know, trying to get to Mexico and get jobs and stuff there. Like Honduras and some other countries they're coming from are definitely like, you know, corrupt and war-torn countries are very dangerous because of MS-13 and other gangs. Like the boys basically got to join gangs so they get killed. The women the girls are, you know, in danger of being, you know, raped and sexually assaulted by the gang. So there's definitely a lot of strife, and there's a reason for them walking, which is why you see so many women and children walking. But a lot of them are not necessarily trying to come to the U.S. They're trying to come, you know, and some of them, like I said, are just walking as a ritual that they do every year. It's like, oh, their caravan starting, so they're walking. But Trump is, you know, locked onto this because, of course, his dumbass just looks at things on TV and it's like, oh, then that's what it is. And so now he's saying that there's like,
well, and also because
Middle Eastern people in it, and they're saying that there's terrorists in it. Of course, if you have a gang of 5,000 people, there's going to be some good and some bad. But if you pull back 5,000 people, it's not that many people.
It's a stadium.
It's not a lot.
It's nothing.
It's a football game.
Not even that.
Not even maybe a high school football game in Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
Not even Texas.
You can't even fill the garden with 5,000 people. That the garden is 19,000. It's nothing. It's like a, it's literally a blip on the radar. But you know,
but
again,
also Trump said those things, and then when challenged head on, he was like, "Well, I actually don't. We don't know that it's true, but it very well could be."
Yeah, he's
so like he admitted
shit.
That he was making his shit up.
Yeah, this has been going on since 2010, and like Jeff said, the majority of these folks are from Honduras and Guatemala. Obviously they're looking to escape this. I have one of the guys who's a vendor, at my house, man. He had gone through some stuff. I think his family's from Ecuador. And basically, man, like he was fucking being extorted all the way from here with his family members that was still there. So, you know, that whole region, which is, you know, obviously rife with, you know, political corruption in those countries is just sort of the wild, wild west a little bit. And this is just being used as a tactic and a ploy. Again, they've been doing this for 8 years.
Exactly. So, this is my point. And people, because most people are dumb with geography, like it's a 1,000-mile walk. It's like walking from here to like Chicago. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like it's just like a little, oh, they walk into stuff, you know, it takes them several weeks.
And they don't, because I think they only do like
20 miles a day,
right? Yeah,
20 miles a day. So, like, they're saying, and if you do make it to the U.S. border, then they most of them ask for asylum. And that's a long, arduous process to be granted asylum. Most of them aren't, which is why they end up staying in Mexico. So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, if you just kind of dig a little deep, and then you don't have to even dig that deep to find out what's
It's
not a thing. It's
but it doesn't.
Bullshit,
but that doesn't work for Trump and this administration's rhetoric because they literally sent more security to the border like yesterday.
Yeah, like 800
they're making it seem like it's literally like a wave of people who are about to come crashing through the border
and then start shooting
at any minute
in the States. Exactly. It's ridiculous. So I just wanted to give people a little knowledge on that.
Can we talk about this young black conservative leadership conference that's happening at the White House right now?
Absolutely. Let's go.
So organized by Candace Owens and Don Jr. and Nat Crew, there is a group of about 300 young black people between the conference was open for people between the ages of 15 and 35, which is a really wide margin. If you were accepted into the conference, the admission, the registration was free. Your hotel is free. Your meals are free.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Your registration fee, hotel free. I think it's two meals are free, but still. Sure. And they all got there yesterday. So of course Trump has pulled out his handful of black people, which is Candace, which is, Reverend Scott, the fake ass reverend from South Carolina, who pretended to be a Kappa.
Time. He pretended to be a Kappa?
Oh yeah, his bio said he was a Kappa and said that he graduated from school and he didn't either.
What? Oh shit, niggas is crazy.
And I think he did an interview with CNN and some interview he did, like they called him on it, like on camera live, and he like walked out the interview or something crazy. So with Reverend Scott, is that his name? Yeah, Reverend Scott.
Yeah, Darnell Scott.
And Darnell Scott. And, with, who else? Ben Carson is the keynote speaker,
of course.
So you got a picture of Don Jr. and Candace on Thursday with like all these young black people in MAGA hats. Trump went and spoke to them yesterday. He walks in, everybody's shouting, USA, USA. Like it's so disheartening to me. Like, I've been almost hoping for an angle. Like, I've been hoping, like, well, maybe some of these people went down there so they could have free room and board for homecoming weekend, you know, because it's how our homecoming
That's what I was thinking. I was like, yo, they're doing this the same weekend as Howard's homecoming. I'm sure that was done on purpose.
But these kids' willingness to be on camera acting a fool discredits that for me. But today at 4:00, apparently Candace Owens is giving a black State of the Union address, which is infuriating.
I'm good. I'm actually stunned that they didn't drag Kanye's ass in there.
They might have tried to. I don't even know. Is Kanye in the country? Who knows? But I'm I'm sure they asked. But it's like what bothers me is that white people love to listen to black people who declare themselves conservatives, right? They love to support them, these Trump supporters. They love black people if they love Trump. So I'm just like, the people who are going to be listening to Candace is going to be more white people than black people. And who knows what she's about to say about us and our culture. Oh my God. Cause that's what she said. She said she's going to talk about a message for all Americans regarding the state of our culture and those who wish to see us divided. And it's going to be live streamed on Twitter. That is just, it's infuriating because it's so dangerous to me. But also, like, who gave her, who gassed her up to think that she could give a black State of the Union address? Like, bitch, who are you?
The president.
Yeah, Trump. Trump. The president. You know, she the one who's been dragging Kanye around. She the one who dragged Jim Brown in there and the other one. So they're looking at her, like, basically as the new Omarosa. She's Omarosa 2.0. She's an attractive woman. You know what I'm saying? She's eloquent in her speech. And he's basically like, yo, Omarosa, and she's younger than Omarosa. So basically, Omarosa's out and she's in. And don't be surprised if before it's all over, she gets some type of post in the administration.
Those kids that are down there, you know, we got to remember, man, like there are still, you know, black folks that are very conservative. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know black women came through and like y'all always do with that vote, you know, but there was still like 9% of black men that voted for Donald Trump. Like, you know, I mean, like that's a very real thing. You know what I'm saying? So,
but I think it being young black people really bothers me.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing though. There is a, we understand that there is, you know, there's no one particular way to be black. Like we're clear on that because of our experiences, but those folks, they don't feel like that. You know, they feel like it's, you have to be this way, this buttoned up respectability shit. I saw a picture of these square ass kids and I'm like, I know he been telling on his cousins since he was yay high. This nigga looked
mama,
like,
mama, he ain't take the trash out.
Yeah. Like they, you can totally, like when I looked at those girls and I looked at what they were, you know, I hate to sound, you know, superficial, but what they were wearing and how they looked, I was like, oh, this is not surprising. Like none of them being conservative when I looked at them was surprising to me at all. And yes, they go out there because they cannot compete with, in my opinion, they cannot compete with us. So they go and basically kowtow to these fucking white folks to make them feel comfortable. And that gets them in the door. It's the reason that they get the interview. It's the reason that they get to be the black friend at the house. It's the reason they are wearing the fucking duck pants and the whale belts and all that corny, the boat shoes and all that shit. They get to be a part of that. They feel like they're included.
They won't.
It's what they want. And look, you know, to me, it's like, you know, fuck them kids and fuck their parents. That's how I feel.
Really fuck their parents as much as the kids.
Fuck them kids too, cause they old enough. I don't give a fuck. You're definitely old enough to know better. Fuck y'all too.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, by the way, let's segue real quick from that into, this guy was on Dr. Phil talk about that, she basically called herself Caucasian.
I'm so angry at that too. I'm just angry that was on TV and that all them white people saw that black girl act.
Tanya,
like
if you don't go sit your ass down.
That's one of those cases of collective embarrassment.
She said she got naturally straight. She said she got naturally straight hair with a hair with a terrible perm in it.
Perm. She looked like she took a hot comb through that motherfucker, like old school.
Ends was all split. Look at the goddamn mess.
The funny thing is, she got super black features.
You're not even remotely close.
Like
she's
not even ambiguous.
Like nigga, what?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like you ain't. Her mom was on there talking about, you know, she's ashamed and sad that her daughter feels that way, but then they found out that her mom married a white guy, and again, which is, you know, whatever, marry who you want. But, you know, I think the stepdad obviously pumped all that shit into the girl, and the mom obviously doesn't fight it.
I don't believe the mom. Fuck,
I don't believe
here.
The mom either.
I don't believe the girl. Also, the girl probably went to predominantly white school
Mom's is co-signing that shit. Cause when you grow up in a black household, like, that shit is very clear, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't know anybody that grew up black that wasn't clear about being black.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, especially like Nas said, especially with the super black features, it's like, what are you even talking about? Like,
yeah.
I think what really bothered me about that show wasn't even like she was like, I want to be white. I think white is better. I could almost see that. And I'm not giving her a pass. I'm saying if you grow up with a white stepfather, maybe she has white step siblings.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a predominantly white school coming up. So I know how it feels to like take a minute to accept who you are and what you are as opposed to us being held up as the standard.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't even like, I think white is better. This bitch was straight up like, I'm white.
Yeah.
And how do you get to that? That's my thing. Like how does that happen?
Yeah. Like how white people live. She's like, no, I'm a white girl. Like, what are you talking about? And she's going to pump that into her children whenever she has them. And it's just going to, you know, and you're just kind of go downhill from there. So that was just bonkers. All right, let's get off the nasty shit. Real quick, I want to do a little movie review. Oh wait, review and a movie review, because I ain't done a music review in a minute, in a hot goddamn minute. So there's a couple albums I want to talk about. I'm sure y'all niggas ain't heard them. Y'all don't give a shit, but I'm gonna talk about it anyway.
You're so rude when you say this. I mean, it's always true, but it's still rude.
It's always true, though.
So, it's
so
rude.
So there's a few things I want to talk about. So Quavo put his solo album out, Quavo Honcho. Very disappointing record. Really talented guy, but just disappointing record.
I heard that it was really like
it's not good. It's not good at all. Takeoff is putting his solo album out next Friday, which I'm actually excited about. I think he's gonna surprise people. Usher put out a trap album. And him and Zaytoven called A.
The people are mad.
I heard it.
Yeah, people are mad. It's not that it's terrible, but it's just that Usher's fans don't
Usher's
want
40.
That from him.
Usher is 40.
And he's making records talking about taking girls to the Gucci store and who you be texting.
You ain't Drake,
what
dog.
What are we doing here?
And you ain't even Chris Brown. You ain't even Trey Songz. Like, stop.
Yeah, so what do you think about that one, bro?
I didn't think it was the worst thing ever, but it definitely felt like a artist past his prime reaching to be relevant in a space that he just almost like a lost artist. You know what I'm saying? Like he just doesn't, I don't want to say he doesn't know who he is, because I'm not talking about him as a man, right? But he doesn't seem to know who he is as an artist.
Creatively, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, he just seems lost in like anything that seems like whatever is happening at the time.
I'll give it a try.
I'll do it because I'll just give it a shot.
It's disappointing because Usher went like, Confessions was and I remember this, I did a recap because everybody was so mad at the album. Confessions was Usher's fifth album. For you to be able to stay in the pocket that many albums deep,
mm-hmm.
and maybe he's just been doing this too long, but like you were in a better R&B pocket when you were younger than you are now. Like just to give some people perspective, Usher is older than John Legend and Alicia Keys. Like John's not 40 yet, nor is Alicia. So it's like you're older than John Legend and Alicia Keys, and you're still out here trying to put out like, dog, do what you need. You're urban adult now, which is okay.
That's one of the more frustrating things, right? Is that we always, you know, do this with our artists, right? Like where we kind of put them out the pasture a little bit, but they also have a hand in that, which is they don't necessarily grow with their audience. You know, Mary is putting out music and it's not going to be 411, bro, because she's not 22.
She's coming out there wearing knee pads and a baseball jersey.
Yes, exactly. And that's what it feels like. It feels like you watching, you know, this is definitely feels like you watching the youngest uncle. Who's an old nigga that don't
Uncle Junior. Uncle Rico.
Uncle Rico.
Yeah.
The old earrings. Yeah, he got the different daddy, Right.
He was a surprise baby.
Yeah, he's a surprise baby and don't know, you know, and just don't quite know where he fit in.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I just, exactly. I feel bad because I don't want to say I feel bad. That's the wrong words, but he's talented. Usher is really a great performer, a great singer. Mm-hmm. He should be, you know, doing, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe he does, you know, he can go out to Vegas and do a stint. He has, the material.
He can,
you know, but I think that, you know, folks don't want to date themselves. And because 40 is not old anymore, it's like, you don't have to be 40 and act like you're 58, but you also don't have to act like you're 19.
You're 21.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, honestly, not for nothing, Usher shouldn't even be producing with Beethoven.
No,
For real.
I mean, like, if you did one joint here and it was fun and it was light.
That's a collaboration with, like, some young folks.
I get it, but, like, to lock into the studio with this guy, and look, God bless him, but I didn't hear anything that moved me.
No, you know, and also, I didn't hear. Sorry, you doing a surprise drop like it's a mixtape. You also, like, your audience also doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, we need a single. We need a video.
We need a signal that you dropping some shit because niggas got bills.
And here's one of the other things that I think is missing is that because he comes from the previous world of music where you were super guarded and you were super, you know, everything was sort of these exclusives and you couldn't really give yourself out like that. Like, nobody really knows Usher. People are not vested. People are not vested in him. He does not do social media well.
We just know his relationships.
And we know his relationships third hand. There is nothing. There is nothing that is him bearing his soul. And I say that with understanding that he does not connect with an audience, not just his initial audience, but an audience period. He doesn't show his sense of humor. He doesn't, if he has one, right? We don't know. We don't see anything. We get more from, we get so much more. We get John's sense of humor. We get, you know, even Alicia will post a pic with the family or doing something fun, roller skating in the house, shit like that. Yeah.
People engage. Us is at Puff's house and Puff posts Usher over there. Yeah, I just thought, like, you're really right. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no connection.
Yeah, so peace to him. Ella Mai dropped her record, her album. The album's okay, but Boot Up is a smash, and the Trip song is pretty much a smash as well, so she'll be okay. The album is all right. It's not bad. It's not great. It's okay. And then the two albums I'm loving, I know y'all niggas ain't heard, is Drip Harder by Lil Baby and Gunna. There you go. Lil Baby and Gunna, two rappers from Atlanta. One is signed to QC, which is Coach K and them. Gunna is signed to Young Thug via 300. They're the two hottest young rappers in Atlanta. They did a collaborative album, which I really enjoy. It's just some hood shit or whatever, but it's really, really good. And then the other album I'm enjoying is World on Drugs, which is this guy, Juice WRLD.
I've been reading about that.
Yeah, what about Future. That album, I love that album. That album is great to me.
What about the Tory Lanez album?
I haven't gotten with Tory yet. It just came out yesterday, so I haven't gotten to it yet. I started to listen to the Mai Tai album a little bit, which is Jeremih and Ty Dolla $ign. The collaborative album has become a thing in 2017 into 18. It obviously started back with Hove and Ye. And then the second big one was Drake and Future.
I feel like they're throwaway albums, though.
Yeah, well, Hove and Drake was.
Hove and Ye weren't. But the new ones, they have very short shelf lives.
But you know what? I think that's more because the time, obviously, it's a different time, and there's just so much music that comes out. It's hard for, and because a lot of times the artists that are doing the collabs are on different labels. So no label is going to really like take a bunch of marketing money to dump into a project that they're only kind of getting half the profits from. True. So they're just kind of like, the first collab album I'm lying was Robert and Hove. was Best of Both Worlds.
Right, Best of Both Worlds.
That kind
of
started it, and then it went from there. But
left the tour. I wish Twitter had been around for that night. Oh my God.
But
bro.
Let me ask you a question.
I was at that show, by the way.
Let me ask you a question.
Does that count toward their albums on their contract?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. No, I think it depends
on which label gets it.
Yeah. I don't think Future and Drake had it.
I mean, Future and Drake Epic got it, I think. And I think it did count
towards Future's deal, did it?
I think that's a very important question, right? Because I think that there's an argument, if it doesn't, and I'm not an attorney, there is an argument to be had that it should, right?
Oh, you're
putting out commercial music. Like, these aren't mixtapes.
You're profiting from it, right?
So I don't quite know what the ins and outs of that is, but I would find it, it seems to be like it's increasing more and more, but I also agree with Nah. I think that a big part of that is like throwaway records, right? Because back in the days, you know, it was a lot to record a record, right? Yeah. It really took a lot. Like, you know, so now you can record, you know, motherfuckers are doing 10 songs in a week. You're getting files, you're getting, you know, somebody sends you beats and it's there and you just do some shit and then that's it. And so I think that there's just this overstock of material that don't make the cut. Not that it's completely bad, but it's not quite album material. There's a need. There's a demand for it. Let's give it to them.
Fab and Jada were never even in the studio together.
Think about that.
They weren't feeding off each other's energy, which is supposed to be the point of a
record. The record was mediocre. Somebody else has dropped something. They said they did it. The Usher woman, they said they did that album in 6 days.
Yes, I believe it.
I believe it.
And Usher is not an artist that should be putting out work that he did in 6 days.
Absolutely not. It takes time. So we got more music coming. Like I said, we got the Takeoff album, and there's a couple other big albums coming before year end as well. So, we'll keep y'all posted. I want to do one movie review. I went to see Star Is Born last weekend. Yeah, it was last weekend, I believe.
What'd you think?
It was really good, man. It was a really good movie. It's a really good movie. One of the things that was interesting to me was, and you don't get this from the commercial at all, and this is what I've been telling, you know, my people of color, is that the movie is actually really diverse. Obviously, you know, you see the clip of Dave Chappelle, who plays like his best friend. The kid that played Mars in the new She's Gotta Have It,
which I still haven't watched. Okay.
I guess that kid was also in Hamilton. He plays her best friend. She works at the beginning in a drag bar. So there's interaction with the drag queens and her, obviously the drag queens and him. And that happens a couple of times throughout the movie. So there's a lot of kind of like color and diversity in the movie, which in 2016, 17, 18, whatever the movie's supposed to be based, that in the music business, that's kind of what it would be. Like, it's not going to be just like all white folks. It's going to be like a little variety of a lot of different people. So I thought that was very interesting that they made sure that there was like, you know, a diverse cast around the movie. And then, Gaga's, you know, she's very good. She's a good actress. And of course, you know, Bradley Cooper's, you know, Oscar nominated actor, and he directed this film as well.
He's been in the Oscar conversations for director too.
Oh, this movie is definitely going to get a lot of nominations at Oscar time for him, for her, for the movie itself. The soundtrack, that soundtrack is going to win. I ain't nobody why anybody would even put a soundtrack out because that's over. And you know, it was a good film. It was a very good film. It's very entertaining. You know, it's dark, but it's good. I mean, I highly recommend it. It's a good night. It's a good night out.
Okay.
Bro, you interested?
No, I'm good. God bless him. I have absolutely no desire. And this is no shot at them. I think they're all talented people. Mm. I've just been in a real funk with the movies lately, man, about the stories that I'm seeing. And, you know, none of that shit excites me. So.
Okay. Well, tell young Jay I suggested to her. She'll love it. I promise you she'll love
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. She might have saw it. I got to ask because she went to a movie the other night. I don't even know. I just drop her off now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I want to mention the NBA fight about a week or so ago between Chris Paul and
Rajon Rondo.
Rajon Rondo. I actually saw that in the spot after the movies live. I was like, oh shit, they scrapping. This NBA season, although it's only 2 weeks old, I guess now.
Seems like it's been going on for a long time.
But it's been awesome. It's been awesome. Niggas been fighting. LeBron in LA. You know, the games is popping. You know, Curry and them is kicking the shit out of niggas. Like, it's been like a really exciting, you know, just couple weeks of the season so far. It's been really compelling basketball. They playing at like the level of like mid season already. Like, it's crazy. It's just been fun. If you're into the NBA, you know, you should be having a good time. You've been watching, bro?
I've been sort of in and out. I haven't really locked in yet. Usually, man.
Well, it's still early.
It's still early. I haven't been able to watch them West Coast games, man. I just don't. Yeah. I be knocking out, man. I ain't got it.
Yeah, it's a late night. And then I also wanted to mention, since we're on talking about sports, two sports stories, actually. One kind of sports and one definitely sports. So last weekend, the Carolina Panthers played the Philadelphia Eagles, and Eric Reed, who was the other person kneeling with Colin Kaepernick while they both were on the 49ers and also had basically been blackballed for several seasons. He's back in the league now with Carolina, obviously. Approached Malcolm Jenkins, who plays for the Philadelphia Eagles, on the field pregame, and like they was about to scrap. The story goes is that Eric Reed and Colin and a couple other guys are really pissed off at Malcolm Jenkins because they look at him as like he co-opted their movement and left them hanging out to dry, and ended up kind of in their mind selling out a lot of the movement to get money from the NFL owners to kind of squash the kneeling and all that stuff that was going on.
Oh, wait, was Malcolm leading like that players coalition
yes.
that was trying to
okay. Yes. Yes, exactly. Malcolm's from Jersey, actually. He's a Jersey cat. So there was a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of kind of like underbelly stuff going on because Malcolm is now he's like the, you know, the nice guy. He's like a nice guy and he's not really going anti NFL and anti owner. And he's like, you know, and again, he's got money. He's definitely done things with the money, like, you know, given to foundations and to, you know, for kids and stuff like that. So he's not like he's, you know, doing anything untoward with the money. But again, the guys who started this movement, who were kneeling and taking all the bullshit and getting blackballed and not being able to play or earn a living, right. When it came time for him to sit down at the table, he didn't even bring them up. He was like, basically, right. Like, I ain't got nothing to do with them dudes. I'm here for this players thing, and this is what we want to do, and we want to work with you guys, obviously, which made it easier for the NFL owners to give them money, because money ain't shit to them anyway, and make right. it all kind of go away. So it was interesting that Eric Reed stepped to him on the field and, like, was really trying to get, like, you trying to fuck him up. Like, and Eric Reed played like a wild man the whole game. He, like, got a couple of, you know, penalties for like roughing a passer. Like, he was just buck wild the whole game. But I just thought it was very interesting how, like, afterwards people kind of looked at Eric Reed as like, of course, the media spun as Eric Reed was just out of control. And right, why right. would he approach Malcolm Jenkins like that and all this stuff? So it was just very, what'd you think about it, bro?
I think he was a little out of control. I don't think it was.
Well, he was out of control.
You know, I think,
not to cut you off. Let me say one quick thing. I look at Eric Reed almost the way he looked as Cardi with Nicki. He was like, it's the only time I'm going to see this nigga. When I see this nigga, I'm going at this nigga.
I am from a place where I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing, right? Like, there are times when people lose control and you know, he didn't lose control because a motherfucker, you know, stepped on his shoe. He lost control because he felt like a motherfucker stole something that they had sacrificed for. Like right. what I'm saying is him losing control was a fair reason in his mind. That was yes. I'm okay with that. Yes. You know, look,
and I'm sure he called Colin before the game. It's like, yo, well, you know, when I see this nigga.
Oh, nigga, that's been on site. That's been an on site conversation.
Colin might have been like, tell him I said.
For a minute, nigga, like for a minute. And look, I also want to say, I think both of them have points, and I'm not both siding, racism. Bomani did a really good podcast on that. But I don't know Malcolm's angle completely. Right. Mm-hmm. And from the outside looking in, yeah, dude, like it definitely looks like this, because the goal was at the end of the day, why does Colin not have a job? That mm-hmm. was the priority. Right. The priority is why are you, you know, but now that you've sort of, you know, allowed this to sort of be swept under the rug, like no one's even talking about this anymore. And like you said, Jeff, like this was about, owners giving up money, which they printing money over there in the NFL.
That's what I'm saying. Ain't shit
and it's matching funds, which means that the players also have to contribute to some of these organizations, which mm-hmm. is like fascinating to me that the billionaires are telling the millionaires, you have to put up more, you know, you have to put up the same funds, which is like
exactly
insane to me. But yes, Malcolm has some questions he's going to have to answer. He's going to have to be held accountable. Also, Eric Reed and Colin did not have a plan of action and a course of action, that they True. Were taking this stuff step by step, and it was not accomplishing the greater good that Malcolm, and we say Malcolm, but listen, he has a coalition, meaning there are mm-hmm. other players that agree with his way of going about this.
And, you know what I'm saying? His partner was, what's old boy that played for Cardinals and the Ravens, the receiver, Bolden. Anquan Boldin.
So yeah, again, I'm saying that I don't necessarily know what the angle is, and what the end result or the end game is for Malcolm Jenkins, but I don't necessarily know that Eric Reed and Colin, seem to have had a plan. It was just yep. like, yo, I'm fucking doing this because I want to do this and I should have a job. I mean, shit don't really yeah. work that yeah. way. You know what I'm saying? This is yeah. a private, yeah. you know, this is a private company. And listen, he has the right to sue them, which he is doing. There mm-hmm. is still an active suit. I don't know about any other business owners, but when someone is actively suing me, I'm probably not going to hire you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And yeah, so I just wanted to mention that because I thought that story was interesting, and I don't think people understood why Eric was going so hard. They just
yeah, I totally to like I'm you know I'm okay with that. Like I'm
yeah, me
like
too.
There's a problem for me with the fucking lack of passion. And like that there's an entire generation, man, that just there's nothing that moves them. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And they don't Everything is chill. Everything is like no. That's why I liked when I saw Cam step the old boy. Like yep. nah. What talk that shit now, nigga?
Exactly. Exactly. What we doing?
What we doing?
exactly. The other sports story I wanted to mention was your boy Ray Ray Gun got out. Ray Caruth got out of prison after 19
I know
years.
Charlotte was waving them to try to get at his son though. They will fuck him up.
Yeah, man. So 19 years he did 19 years in prison for killing the woman who bore his son. All because he didn't want to pay child support. This dumbass nigga.
And trying to kill the baby too.
The child is 19 years old now. Like I said, he's a bit, you know, mentally challenged because he lost oxygen and stuff like that.
He will need lifelong care.
Exactly. Because he lost oxygen, you know, when his mother was killed.
45 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So, Ray got out and immediately started talking about, he wanted to see his son, and his mom was saying basically like, I don't understand why, his grandmother won't let us see, the child
You really don't understand? The grandmother actually had been taking the child to see Ray while he was locked up. Mm. One of the problems is that about a year ago, Ray started looking into getting custody of his son. Yes. And the only reason he would want custody of his son, to be honest, is so that he could get access to that boy's benefits. Let's be real. Because mm-hmm. what's Ray going to do? Like you're going to all of a sudden take over care of your son at 19 after you've been in jail for 19 years. Like, you're not qualified to care for him better than his grandmother is.
And a child with special needs on top of it, you know?
Right. So apparently the Charlotte Observer has done a podcast series about this whole thing. And the guy who, I need to listen to it, but I heard it's really well done. But apparently the guy who did the hit for Ray.
Van Brett Watkins. I listened to the,
That nigga.
So, Sean, is it true that he wrote to the boy, to Chancellor's grandmother, and said, you need to watch out for Ray because he still might try to do harm to you and his son?
Yes. So basically Van Brett Watkins, who is the man who's actually the trigger man here, wrote Mrs. Adams, Sandra Adams, a letter basically saying, hey, you know, Ray is going to be getting released soon and you guys should be, you know, concerned about your welfare. He hates Ray's guts. Now, again, let me be clear. I'm not painting Ray. I'm not painting Ray as an angel. He could have rotted in that prison for the rest of his life for all I cared. Mm-hmm. But this is also a person who has a vendetta and has made it very clear that his goal for the remainder of his life is to make Ray's life hell.
Yep.
And that's fair, right? Like that's fair. He gets to feel however he wants to feel with somebody he's done some crimes with. So whatever that meant, do I think Ray is going to try and go out there and kill that kid? I don't know. I don't necessarily think that he would do something like that. But again, who would have thought that he would have, you know, basically set up set her up to be murdered. So yes, should there be some concern, some cause of concern? Absolutely. Is this something that I would take like incredibly seriously? I don't know. Ray, you know, his mom reporting and, you know, basically saying she doesn't understand is very indicative of why Ray is in the position that he is in. If you listen to the podcast, you will notice that Ray really sort of breezed through life with no accountability, and incredible access. He's a handsome, very charismatic guy by all accounts. And those two things are very, you know, money, charisma, and good looks is a dangerous combination for a motherfucker's ego. And you can tell that it fed that. This was the worst fucking, it's unimaginable. And I actually remember watching this case on Court TV, when it was going live. That dude, Van Brett Watkins, is, and I've said this before, he's from old New York.
He's an old cold killer, boy.
Them New York dudes that were coming of age, like that preteen and teenage years between the years of like 72 and like 85.
Like gang New York.
Them niggas are cold, man. Cold.
Yeah.
And
they'll kill you and act like, you know, and keep it moving like it ain't nothing.
New York was a different animal. It was a different animal at that point. So listen, this guy, he's basically going to spend the rest of his life in jail. He's almost 60 years old now. He's about 58 years old. He has, you know, health concerns, health problems. He's got another 20 years to go. You know, if he lives that long, if he makes it to 78, he gets out. I mean, you know, what's going to happen for him? You know, Ray basically is at 40 years old. He's coming out of prison. He's a pariah. I would hope that he is still a social pariah, that he is still someone that people, you know, that people will not want to fuck with. Apparently he's a barber. A licensed barber, got his barber license in jail. I'm assuming that's probably going to be the only job he can deal with. There was some talks about him changing his name, which
he moved to Pennsylvania too. He moved to Pennsylvania too.
I mean, you know,
for what it's worth, I don't know what that means, but you know.
Yeah, you know what, man? again, you know, they go out there, man, because, you know, cost of living is cheap. You know, motherfucker can, you know, make $400 a week and live a fairly reasonable life, you know, some of those places. So, you know, he's home. It's really, it's nothing that anyone could do about it. I hope that the grandmother, is fine. She's also mentioned that she would, basically she got 10 grand. Wow. Out of all of this shit, she got 10 grand and actually said she didn't even get all of the 10 grand because the lawyers took their cut. She probably walked out of there with 7 grand. So she said, look, you know, she has a judgment against Ray in civil court. So if he's able to, you know, get a book deal or sell his movie rights or any of that sort of shit, there she will be some. Yeah. And she was like, I'm okay with that. You know, basically like I could basically saying like I could use the help. Like we not fucked up and we not destitute, but like, this but is restrained.
A little more would be nice.
A little more ain't going to hurt nobody. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. We got a little fat back in the greens this week.
Exactly. We got ground chuck. So I just wanted to, mention that because that was a big thing. Next couple of stories, I'm actually let one of y'all handle both of y'all handle one apiece. Now I'm gonna get this next one to you. Brother Nature.
Oh yeah.
I know you were paying attention to this. So Brother Nate, I'll give you a little setup. So Brother Nature's a young kid. I think he's from Pennsylvania actually, right? I think via New York. The families that moved from the city out to Pennsylvania, and he made his he got famous by posting videos online of him feeding deer who would come to their house. Obviously, out in Pennsylvania in the woods, there's a lot of wildlife out there, and that kind of exploded to him becoming famous on especially online for his his interaction with animals. And he's a great looking kid, and he also started to. This dude was super charismatic and also he's very funny and also started to do, started a foundation to feed people, called Everybody Eats, which he feeds like people that, you know, are like low income and stuff like that. So he seems to have a good heart, but I'll let you take it from there.
Well, you know, he's become, his name is Kelvin Pena. Yeah. He's like 19 and there's rumors that there's a TV deal happening too. And people have been watching him. His profile's been growing. He recently got veneers. He got a Bentley. You know, so like things are happening. Foreign cars are coming.
Some papers coming. Yeah.
Some papers.
He's traveling on traveling on PJs. He's doing his thing.
Yeah. So he's in the mix. But he seems a good kid with a good heart. And I firmly believe that animals know who people are. And these animals really fuck with him. Like sea creature, like. Anything. It's not just the deer. Like he's been traveling more, and no matter where he is, like they're fucking with him, right?
Yeah, they feel his energy. Like he's had a clip recently where he was like feeding some squirrels. Like squirrels don't just come up to people, like you know what I'm saying? Like he's like like I said, I think there's an energy about him that animals recognize.
They really fuck with him. And so there's a girl who is online who is an animal fanatic, activist, whatever, conservator, whatever. But she was complaining about how Brother Nature has fans that are feeding animals inappropriate stuff because they're trying to be like him. So she was like, they're feeding the birds and deer's popcorn. What the fuck? And I went through her timeline like 3 or 4 different times. I think she must have deleted some tweets, but it went from her complaining about that and her complaining about how much people love and kind of worship Brother Nature. To her pulling up old tweets from 2012, where he was talking about Hitler or the KKK or anything like that. Sorry. Now in 2012, he would have been 14.
Yeah, 13 or 14. I think it was 12.
He would have been in middle school. He would have been in middle school.
Like 7th, 8th grade.
Yeah. And this is the entire problem with the whole cancel culture shit is like, you're bringing, it's different if a person is 30 and in 2012 they were a grown ass person. But especially if you were a kid who grew up in this digital age, you were definitely clout seeking at that age. And he locked his account for a minute and people started pulling up other stuff. Like he definitely said like some racist shit, some sexist shit. So people just now were just pulling up stuff. But again, it's all from like 2012. And he locked his account for a bit. And, you know, people were going through the Brother Nature's canceled thing, whatever. But a lot of people were really like, but he was a kid.
He's a child.
And he was a child. Like, he was in middle school. What the fuck, right? So a lot of people were already, like, giving him that grace. Because I know I definitely was like, I can kind of allow for that. Like, you're grown now. And honestly, clearly your energy is different now. So he locked his account for a while, I guess, to try to get to readjust. And he put out a statement, which I thought was fair, which was like, listen, I've been on the internet for however many years. I was a kid. I was seeking attention. I definitely know better, you know, but I take responsibility for my words, but I know better, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems to have gone away.
Yeah. But yeah, it definitely seems to have gone away. That's the news cycle's fast now, but it definitely seems to have gone away. It was because it was ridiculous. I mean,
it was
again,
ridiculous. Like, it's amazing how as soon as somebody starts doing something good, you're like, let me find some old shit.
Nah, let me tell you something. This ain't about nobody doing nothing good. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is about niggas being mad that he was becoming famous. That's all this shit was about. This shit was rooted at its core in jealousy. Okay.
And
people go around feeding animals dumb shit all the time. Okay. Mm-hmm. And maybe there was an increase on that because they saw Brother Nature. And this would probably have been a really good time to simply let people know, hey, these are the things you should not be feeding. First of all, it is incredibly dangerous to feed wild animals. First of all, right?
Period.
Like, let's start there. Period. No matter what your intentions are. Okay. They're fucking wild animals. Like, don't get that twisted. I had a deer caught in the net in the back. Like, that's a wild fucking animal, dude. You can't just be acting like it's okay. So, furthermore, man, like a big part of this shit is that people do things and they commit to careers and they commit to passions that are not financially beneficial for them. Right. Mm-hmm. And then they see someone who doesn't have their knowledge or the things that they consider to be vital to be that person. And so what happens is that as that person grows and gets all of this, gets these accolades, all of a sudden now everything they've ever done was problematic. Okay.
Right.
He's a fucking 13-year-old kid. All right. Do you know how much dumb shit people did when they were 30? And then people trying to say that it's the same.
If we had had internet when I was 13, oh my God.
People are saying, I saw one dude go on and on about 13, you know better. Listen, I understand the context of the point was at 13, there was an understanding of right from wrong, which is valid. But at 13, there was not an understanding that this wrong is going to live with me forever.
Yeah, exactly.
You are not processing. You are not you don't have the mental ability to just process this shit at 13 years old.
I also don't know if at 13 you really understand the magnitude of Jewish genocide and Hitler and the Nazi party.
It's hard, but you know what? It's very difficult. It's very difficult for me because again, I grew up in a school system where that stuff was taught to us. So it was very common knowledge for us and for kids that were going, you know, in my neighborhood.
Right.
I don't necessarily know what that would have been. I know in my house, we've always talked about this sort of stuff. But I say all I have to say, knowing that it's wrong doesn't mean you're not going to do it at 13 years old.
Exactly.
That was my point, right? So, listen, I wish him well. I hope he's able to, you know, do whatever he loves and to continue the things that he's doing. It doesn't seem like this is a thing for him. No. The fact that somebody went back 6 years to pull up a tweet really is indicative to me as to their motives and
there was no 2014. There was no 2015. There was no 2000. Like, it was all 2012. And what really bothered me is that the chick who did it doesn't have her real name or her real Abby. So you out here trying to expose other people,
and you're on Anon.
But I think that there's, but I think that there is, but I think that this really there's a part of this culture that feeds an industry. It feeds an industry. Yes. That blog culture, that lipstick alley culture, the shade, all of that, of that, the glory that those folks feel, the endorphins that they must
get. We canceled him. He's canceled and now.
Like, not just we did it, but I started it.
Yeah, I started.
I struck the match
I got him canceled.
Yeah, it's like, so you got a dude that fucking feeds deer cancel. And by the way, I don't even believe that's the same deer all the time. I think that he's lying.
That's Canelo. Be
that ain't there's no Canelo.
There's Canelo, but there's a couple of them.
I think them all be different deers. How we gonna know? How we gonna know, nigga? We don't know if that's Canelo, but deer, you got a fucking Canelo. Piece of watermelon.
Every deer gonna get it. Yo, Canelo almost had my car once. Everybody on Twitter almost had a heart attack. It was crazy. Like, we're all invested in Canelo at this point. But that's what a lot of people are saying. A lot of people are like, I don't give a fuck. Y'all can cancel him all day. I'm not canceling shit. Like,
yeah, I ain't kidding. Whatever.
I was like that too.
Animal. He loves animals. Okay, Macy, you know what I'm saying? He ain't hurt nobody. Let him get his money. Like, he's doing appearances. I saw one of him online at, I think it was one of the college.
He got him a new look, man. He
got a Ferrari. Got an apartment in the city.
I was just getting ready to say, he living down there. Look like Soho. Look like he off on Broadway. And nice shit. He just posted up with the nice iced out Rollie with the Jubilee bracelet. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Ran his pockets a little piece of chain. So, God bless him. He got new teeth. That's the demarcation of we about to really get this paper is the new teeth.
Right.
When they get new teeth,
is a signal.
Oh yeah. When they get new teeth, that means he got an agent. He's taking meetings.
He had to take some test shots.
Exactly. So I wanted to mention that. And then Bro, I'm gonna let you go real quick with the Netflix story, breaking down
we can't do it.
Were they?
We can't talk. We can't.
Oh,
talk
that's about right. That. That's right. That's right. Okay, it's cool. Well, skip Netflix then. Let's let's talk about Megyn Kelly.
Well.
Okay. Fuck her. Next.
Next. So Megyn Kelly was on, I'm gonna set up for you, bro. Megyn Kelly was on, her show this week past, and obviously Halloween's coming up, next week, and then Thanksgiving will be the day after that. And, she was talking about, they were talking about costumes and kind of like what the people gonna wear, and they got the story veered into blackface and her words, also white face, which is ridiculous. And she started basically saying, what's wrong with wearing blackface? You know, is if you want to dress up like she used Diana Ross's example. Everybody loves Diana Ross. If I want to dress up as Diana Ross, like, what's wrong with me wearing blackface? I'm just kind of, giving a tribute to Diana Ross. I just want to look as close to her as possible. This caused an uproar, and bro, I'll let you take it from there.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically she, basically co-signs blackface and says that when she was a kid, everyone was doing it.
Which is bonkers.
Which is also not quite true. More people did it, but it wasn't really like straight up, I'm going to put some black paint on my face and do blackface.
Like, first of all, I don't even know if that lady's 50, okay?
Yeah, she's like 47, 48.
Okay, so we're talking about when you were growing up, it's the 80s. Like, stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes.
Unless you were friends with Craig T. Nelson.
Yeah, it was definitely frowned upon. So cut the shit. Stop acting like you was born in 1913. Okay. So, then she goes, basically she gets eviscerated on Twitter and social media just in general. Everyone picks it up. She then comes back with the classic, traditional white apology, which is
in like 5 hours.
Yeah, like the hey, I realized the error of my ways now type shit, and it's just like whatever. And then of course NBC does what NBC does, which is you spend this moment for the greater good of yourself, right? So what do?
Of course, you
get the black folks to
Al Roker dragged his ass out there.
Yeah, drag out Al, drag out who
Al Roker is so tired of these people.
Yeah, and you know why? Because Al don't get them shots. And what is amazing to me is that
Al was in that time slot, and they moved him out of the time slot. Him and Tamron's time slot.
Bumped him out for her, okay? And the most important thing here is that NBC knew what they were getting when they got her. This is not the first time she has made comments of this nature, you know, Santa Claus is white, get over it, and all of the other shit. She has shown who she was. And now they want to pretend as though they had no idea. Well, they also negotiated, her folks have negotiated a buyout, which basically means that NBC is going to have to pay her out her entire contract, which is $69 million,
which is
fascinating to me that this woman is making that kind of bread. Because I don't know Al and Tamron's deal. I'm 100% sure
it wasn't that. I promise it wasn't that.
Well, here's the thing. That 69 was based on Megan doing that TV segment and that morning segment, and she was supposed to have an evening weekend news show. And she started, you guys might remember, one of her first interviews for the evening news show was Alex Jones. And it went so badly that they pulled it. They pulled the show. She couldn't compete against 60 Minutes and stuff like that. So already she was being paid for more. She wasn't doing as much as she was, that her contract was negotiated for her to do. The second thing is that apparently the ratings have been so low because the ratings have not met Alan Tamron's ratings, that NBC was already in talks to phase her out at the end of the year. But there was still a question of whether they were going to put her somewhere else in the network. But they were definitely going to get rid of that hour. So this just pushed it over the top. And the thing is that, and Sean, you can co-sign this, TV segments do not just happen. She didn't just get out there and have this conversation and nobody knew what it was going to be or what her position was going to be. There's production notes, there's pre-production calls, there's all of that stuff. So there's no way that her producers didn't know what her stance was going to be, where the direction was going to go. You can't tell me they didn't have an all white panel on purpose. And I think she thought, or maybe the people thought, it would go like the Santa Claus thing did, which would, it would be clickbait, but she would have enough support so that she could get away with it. And it ended up, even the people on the panel were kind of like, whoa, no, what are you talking? No, you know, and I think it went so left that NBC had to be like, we're done. It's a wrap. We got to stop.
That's exactly what happened. I mean, and at this point they were looking, I'm assuming that they were probably trying to look to cut their losses and figured that maybe they can reach a settlement and maybe not pay out the full 69. You know what I'm saying? You know, maybe meet her halfway. I don't know what that means in terms of non-competes or if she can go work elsewhere. This might be her last run. I don't know if there are many other options. She's failed in two major places. She's been fired, relieved of her duties at two major places. I don't know what the next steps are unless there's...
And she's not like a for real journalist. She's not. Fox standards, but she's not.
Yeah, she's not. She's not a likable person. I'm good, but it is, again, fascinating to me that we use, you know, ratings and we use all of these sorts of things and all of these metrics as a way to tell people what they are not worth. And we look at a deal that she struck and you're just kind of fascinated and dumbfounded about this. Tells you, man, who agents throw their weight behind. Because that's agents and managers and people behind the scenes driving that. They are setting the market for her. They are saying she's not entertaining anything less than X, Y, and Z. You know what I'm saying? So,
and there was a bidding war for her when she got to NBC. So they really thought
thought they had a big one.
And that was also when the climate was, everybody thought they were going to have to turn more conservative because of Trump. And I think now the pendulum is swinging back the other way where people are actually like, no, we need to be part of the resistance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a part of it. I also think that, like a lot of places, it is not uncommon for networks to have a contrarian view that is part of television now, even if you look at sports, right? The whole ESPN.
That's why they got Whitlock's coon ass on Fox.
Well, he actually is in line with their thinking, right? But what I'm saying is like, if you look at ESPN, like their entire, everything they do is based on the contrarian point of view, right? Like, so you have Skip and you have, Will Cain. Shannon. And those sorts of dynamics, right? So I understand why they would hire a person like that, because she was more palatable as that, you know, as a woman and as a fairly attractive woman, she was more palatable in that role. So they were figuring, okay, we can get somebody to sort of, you know, challenge and push against, you know, this sort of agenda. So we don't seem like we're completely left leaning, but it's not crazy. And she went off the deep end. She went off the fucking deep end. She did the one. It's like three things you can't really do. Nigga, she did one of them.
Yep. So it's over. I mean, again, she's walking away with 69. So
oh, yeah, ain't nobody don't cry
for her punk ass. She's good to go.
I believe her agent dropped her. I believe CAA dropped her.
Yeah, they did.
CAA dropped her, and then she was in talks to go to another agent. Yeah, they backed out.
UCA pulled out of that. Yeah. And yeah, well, I'm sure they're going to be sending that invoice for that commission. Oh, you better believe that.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
absolutely. 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 Real quick, peace and love to Wawa Watson, who's one of the most famous legendary studio musicians ever, really. Shit, you know, he played on pretty much any great black, especially Motown album you can think of. He played with Michael, he played for Marvin, he played with Steve.
He played for Maxwell.
He played with everybody. He was like literally the best, you know. He passed away this week at 67. Years old, very young. I didn't read what the reason for his death was, but regardless, I just wanted to mention him because he's a legendary cat. And last thing I wanted to mention was a story I kind of think it's kind of funny, even though some people kind of got hurt a little bit. The story about this floor collapsing at Clemson University.
At a Kappa party.
It was a Kappa party. There's video footage of it. They're playing this song called Mobamba by Sheck West. For those who don't know, Sheck West is this African kid from Harlem, 116th Street, who's a model as well. And he has this huge kind of club hit called Mobamba. Mobamba is a basketball player from Harlem, also African kid from 116th Street. They grew up together. Mo is now in the league playing with the Orlando Magic. So Sheck West made the play, named the song after his homeboy. And it's become like this song that just gets kids go super rowdy when they play. They just jump and they mosh pit and they go in ham. And so they're playing this party at this club this Kappa house, on the top floor. And the kids are saying that they could feel the floor kind of shaking like a trampoline. And then the floor just kind of gives way, and 30 people, you know, were sent to the hospital, you know, a couple of broken bones, a couple of scrapes, you niggas be all right, you know what I'm saying? And now they got a great story to tell. And now they got a great story to tell. The day was at the most lit Kappa party ever. And yeah, Mobamba. And honestly, if I was them kids, the next thing I'd be trying to do is organize some paper to get Sheck West to come to Clemson University and perform that song. That should be the school anthem now.
Yeah, but that Kappa house is going to have to pay for that damage. And somebody's parents is mad as hell. I'm going to tell you that because be clear, Clemson is a white school.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's be very clear.
Birth in racism. You know what I'm saying? It started back in the 1800s or when it started. So. Yeah, visitors on that campus.
Yeah, peace to them kids, but I'm worried about the aftermath. Like whose house was that? Who's paying for that?
Yeah, because a whole damn floor going.
Nigga, a whole floor? Like, was it on campus? Was it off campus? Was it campus housing? Was it not? You know, a lot. But I mean, it's an interesting story, but it's funny because, you know, in this day, because it happened, when did it happen? That happened a couple of years ago at some other house party, and it was the same thing where, like, somebody was videoing it, had it on a camera phone, and all of a sudden the phone started shaking, and you literally just saw the hole open up.
Wow.
So it's interesting that we get footage of these things now because everybody want to put everything on Instagram stories.
Yeah, they said the kids are saying they could hear that the floor was about to crack, but nobody wanted to stop because the party was so lit. They just kept jumping and going ham.
That is the most college fucking excuse.
Exactly.
In the history of the world.
Word. I wanted to stop, but the song was only halfway done.
The floor was falling.
But the good part was great. Come on.
So crazy. So I just and they were probably thinking out loud, like, yo, the floor is moving. Oh, shit.
Oh, shit, it's popping in here, nigga. It was probably sat. You know they were Snapchatting and all that. Nigga, get over here. This shit lit.
It's all for the game. So, yeah, that motherfucking insurance carrier drop your ass.
Exactly. It's all fun and game until the person you rented the house from gives you the bill.
Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to mention that. We're going to wrap up on that note. It's a rainy ass Saturday, like we said. So we about to go just do rainy ass Saturday shit for the rest of the day. Peace to y'all and peace to everybody listening. Yep. And we'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
We got it on Halloween. All right. Later.
Oh, yeah. We got to figure that out.
We got to figure that out.
We got to figure that out. We'll see y'all next week. One day, maybe one day.
All right. Later, y'all. Peace.
All right.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast. Talk to you next week.